You keep on fooling, baby, I'm ruling. Do-do-do-do-do. Tagcast is coming down, I wanna give it to you. Do-do-do-do. Fan's gonna give you his love. Uba's gonna give you his love. Oh, want a whole lot of love for the Tagcast. What's up, guys? It's Optimus here. Tagcast rolling in full effect. I got our awesome co-host, Fenrir765. And tonight we have the very special guest, the amazing, the ultimate, the everable humble, Ubo. What's up, guys?
Hey, man. You know, did the classic rock conversation before give you the inspiration?
Oh, 100%.
Nice. I mean, we were just talking a little bit earlier about, you know, when did, like, 90s, like, grunge, 90s grunge and metal
become classic rock?
Become classic rock. I mean, yeah, it's wild.
Like, so 5-10 years ago, easy.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to listen to the radio, I guess, to know more about that. But, yeah, welcome to the Tagcast, episode number 2 of season 3. We're glad to have you here. We're glad to be chatting about video games. And we're glad to have Ubo for show number 3. Ubo, what's going on, man?
Everything's going great. I'm a little concerned that you're trying to get me the 4 just to off me before Stevie. Which would be great, because, you know, I gotta beat Stevie to everything, right? So, if that's possible, that'd be fantastic.
You know, I kind of owe all of our fans a disservice, because I did not get the Stud Knuckle as a surprise guest to have the Great Panda Debate live on the show tonight. So, it's coming. Maybe that will be your 4th episode.
My final episode, the one where I just lose my shit, and then, you know, you gotta do that guy a solid and just give him his own Monster Hunter channel, because he just, the poor guy deserves it. He carries that franchise on his shoulders, you know.
I don't think he wants one, but I'm gonna digress out of that one. Yes, well, you know, it's been, what, 3 weeks since we last recorded. We, you know, life's been a little busy for some of us, and we decided to take a week off, or not a week off, but delay a week. But we're glad to be back, and there's been a lot of news. I mean, WB Games is trying to get into the live service thing, and good luck to you guys with that. Diablo 2 Remastered possibly coming. Apparently, GameStop is going wild with their shares.
Stock's fucking out of control or something. Yeah, I mean, like, what?
That stuff I don't understand. I don't even want to pretend to understand, but hey, if you made money off of it, more power to you. PUBG apparently has 2 more games coming out sometime this year and next year. And then, you know, a franchise that is probably beloved by a few of us on the show, wow, Ninja Gaiden, there it is. Itagaki? Am I saying that correct? He starts a new studio, so I mean, yeah, like, it's kind of cool to see what's going on in the world. But, you know, I think the really biggest news since we last recorded was something out about a beloved franchise of ours, Ubo. I mean, you were kind of foaming with these announcements. What's going on over there in a galaxy far, far away? Or,
well, let me take you back to 1992. We had to say dickety because the Kaiser stole our word for 20. Anyways, no, back in the mid to late 90s, I was a huge fan of the LucasArts games. Games like, is it Monkey Ball? Full Throttle, loved that game. Star Wars Rebellion.
Grim Fandango.
Yeah, just a bunch of those games. And LucasArts kind of disappeared with over the years. And as a result, instead, they kind of franchised their Star Wars properties to EA for years. Well, in the past couple of weeks, it's come to light that Disney, now owning everything to do with Star Wars, has kind of rebooted LucasArts, but now called Lucasfilm Games. Which instead is going to be, I guess you could say, almost your licensing branch of that.
It's like
whole,
an umbrella, right?
Yeah, because they're not going to be directly involved in the development of games like LucasArts was. Instead, they're going to be licensing out different Lucas film properties.
They're like supervising the Star Wars gaming properties.
Right. So as soon as that dropped, there's been talk about a ton of different Lucas film properties going to different developers. There was talk about Massive, the developers of Massive and Ubisoft, the developers of Division 2, doing a Star Wars, doing a Star Wars game. Well, specifically, Massive worked on the Division 2.
Right, but they also worked on Far Cry 3.
Okay, as well as I think. There was hopes that someone would do a Mandalorian style game, which one of the developers came out and said, yeah, that was Star Wars 1313. That was going to be like
right.
a bounty hunter version of that game, which made a lot of people very depressed.
And they're using the engine from the Division 2, the Snowdrop engine. Yes.
And there was also talk of, and I lost the name of the developer, but of a new Indiana Jones game.
No, that was that's Bethesda that's working on that.
Okay. And on top of all that, there is rumors of a new KOTAR remake in the works. Supposedly
Dude,
not
take a remake any day.
Supposedly not being done by EA or BioWare, so it's going to be interesting to see who is working on it. Because as far as I know, the studio hasn't actually been announced as of yet.
Well, it won't be Obsidian, because they're working for Microsoft now.
Yeah, as I said, that's the two studios, right? BioWare and Obsidian.
Yeah, BioWare did KOTOR 1, Obsidian did KOTOR 2.
It'd be interesting. I hope for everything it is a remake, but I hope they don't go too crazy with the story.
I wouldn't mind just a literal complete remake of that game, but running on modern machines with updated graphics and maybe some quality of life improvements. I would totally be down with that. They don't even have to change the story or the voice acting or anything.
Well, your boy Revan is Canon Ubo, right?
Well, he was briefly referred to in that masterpiece that was Rise of the Sky of Skywalker, right? So, we'll see. Another interesting little tidbit in there, as you mentioned, that Bethesda studio working on the Indiana Jones game. There is some speculation of whether that will be an Xbox only game as a result.
I hope not.
And again, it may be up to Lucasfilms. Lucasfilms may say, no, we want this on all platforms, right? As the license.
Stipulation of the license, yeah.
Yeah, so.
And that deal could have been done well before the Microsoft deal, so they would have to honor it to an extent, right? But you'd probably see it on Game Pass day one for $1.
I can't even.
Wow.
Not even 10 minutes in the show, and there it is.
I can't even just.
Well, I mean, let's hope Game Pass stays $1 because they were gonna jack up literally double the price of Xbox Gold, and as soon as they announced this, the internet backlash was insane. Microsoft announced, what was this, 5 days ago, that Xbox Live Gold was going to go up to $120 a year. Most people speculating that that was in a move to push people towards Game Pass. And immediately the entire internet basically shit down their neck, for lack of a better word. And within 12 hours, Microsoft reversed the policy. Not only did they reverse the policy that they're going to leave Gold at $59 a year and grandfather everybody in that's already on Gold, but they also took all of the games that required Gold to play online that were free out of the Gold umbrella. So now you can play Call of Duty Warzone without even having to have Gold. So almost we won, even though they were going to hose us over. That's a pretty interesting turnaround.
Do you think that they were, even with the price hike, they would have made those free-to-play games free outside of gold.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, if they would have come out with that as, like, their first thing and then raise the price, do you think it would have been an easier pill to swallow?
No. Okay. No, because I think for some people, Game Pass is awesome. It's an awesome deal. But for some people that don't, they only play like one or two games like all year, Game Pass isn't that great of a deal for them, right? And maybe there are games that are not popular or never go to Game Pass because they're not first party games. Like, say the only game you played was Call of Duty all year for the most part, and you play with your friends, for them to double your gold price kind of sucks, right?
Because. Well, I'll push back on it because a lot of people outside of, you know, the group that we play with on a regular basis, the people that are playing Call of Duty, they're playing Modern Warfare and pretty hardcore playing that all the time. So I'm not saying that, I'm just playing devil's advocate in a way. So, I mean, there is a big population playing those free-to-play games that...
Well, I mean Warzone, but I'm just saying that, yeah. Let's say you play the, what, like this year it's Black Ops Cold War. Let's say you're playing that, and next year you plan on buying the rumored Call of Duty World War III or whatever. You know, it sucks if you don't want to play any of the first-party titles, you have no interest in Game Pass, for them to all of a sudden double your gold to try and push you into Game Pass, right? Because, right, they were trying to push gold to the price point that Game Pass was, to $120 a year U.S., right, and Game Pass Ultimate's $180 a year U.S., $15 a month versus $10 a month. But the backlash pushed them back down. So the gamers won. Now, if only they could get the Call of Duty fans to backlash against Activision for some of their shady stuff, we might make some headway there. But that's a story for another day, I guess.
I kind of wonder about the free-to-play games. Someone at Microsoft must have crunched the numbers to figure the break-even point, and I wonder if those free-to-play games, Microsoft gets a cut of the transactions, right? Like, when you buy something on a microtransaction in Modern Warfare, in Fortnite, whatever, Microsoft gets a cut of that. I wonder if someone did the math and said, you know what, gold for these games, you know, doesn't really matter. We make our money on those microtransactions anyways. And you got to figure someone's done the math for that.
I mean,
yeah, maybe.
There's definitely bean counters that make money to figure out how to make more money. So,
like, I wonder how developers make money on Game Pass, right? Like, it's such a terrific value. And when you hear stories about, like, is it Deep Rock Galactic? Mm-hmm. How they have like over 2 million copies out there, but it's like, how many of those are Game Pass? Like, it's not all money going into their pockets directly. Like, I don't think there's much out there in terms of public knowledge of how that whole pricing structure between Microsoft and...
I don't know if it was Phil or if it was somebody, but I remember hearing in an interview where he was kind of like, some developers, it's like an upfront, like, we pay X number of dollars upfront and we get your game on Game Pass. Some is like a royalty, like per download or per X number of hours played. So I think it's a fluid thing depending on the developer, the game, and, you know, all microtransactions, things that are all like probably in the system. So I don't think there's one hat that fits every single game that's on Game Pass. But yeah, I agree. But it would be really interesting to see, when this is all said and done, it'd be interesting to see the book that tells us how this actually happened, how it worked. But
yeah, I don't think Microsoft is ever going to pull back that curtain at all. And I think as... I don't know if it's an industry, but as video game delivery evolves into Stadia, into Luna, into the subscription-based cloud model, you know, it's... I think Microsoft is ahead of the curve already, but I think it's going to be more prevalent, and I don't think they're eager for their dealings to be public knowledge.
Oh, no, yeah. I agree. I mean, either way, it's an incredible setup they got going, and I'm glad that the live didn't change. I think it's, I think it was a sucky thing to do. It didn't impact me because I'm set with Game Pass Ultimate till like 2023. So I'm not too concerned for myself, but I'm happy for like UHOP and others who do only use the live service.
Well, I have a sweet setup where my buddy game shares and he pays for Game Pass, so I don't need to pay for Game Pass.
Yeah, so that's even better. But, you know, it's just, it's stuff like that. I mean,
dear Phil Spencer, someone's abusing your system right now.
Hey, no, they've advertised the game sharing, so they know what's up. But the big thing is, I think it's just interesting. I worry that Ultimate is going to start increasing here soon. I can't see how this will maintain. But, you know, we'll see what happens as time goes on. Hopefully, before I can stack some more of those, like, 3-month cards for, like, $20 on Ultimate.
Wait, how much?
What?
$20?
A dollar.
Funny. Someone was telling me that it was... Hold on. Carry the one. It was a dollar.
I was hoping I could slip that under, but it didn't work. Anyways, another thing that came out, have you guys ever played Limbo or Inside?
Sadly, I have not.
Oh, wait, you mean the game. I thought you meant, like, the... I must be old. Where you actually, like, walk under that stick?
No, the video game Limbo.
Oh, no. The video game Inside.
Nope, my back. No Limbo for me.
Well... If you haven't, I do suggest, Ubo, that if you get a chance to find those two games, get them, play them, because they're beautiful masterpieces. Playdead Studios kind of has revealed a little bit about their new project. All we know is it's a third-person science fiction adventure set in the remote corner of a universe. I got this from IGN, and they from their job listings on Playdead's website. But yeah, it's pretty interesting to think that they're kind of maybe stepping outside their box a little bit. We'll see, but they kind of do these little side-scrolling stories that don't have words, that don't have any, you know, like big major explosions, set piece type things. It's a very like cinematic, artful type game, and it's one of those games that definitely pushes that question: are video games art? So I'm excited to see what they do next, and I can't wait to see what happens. Ubo, you know, you said you had a question for us that you would like to get some input on.
Yeah, so and this is like, it's a funny question because as I look at my playlist, it's kind of hypocritical for me to start talking about the idea of remakes and remasters. But there seems to be this growing trend right now of publishers remastering old classic games or remaking old classic games. For example, KOTAR being announced, Final Fantasy VII being a remake, the announcement of the Diablo 2 remaster. How do you feel about all these remasters? Because I kind of think on the one side, it's kind of stifling new properties, new intellectual properties from coming forward, new games, new game mechanics, new franchises from being developed when all your resources are going into a game, a beloved game such as Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2, which everyone loves. But, you know, it's ultimately a cash cow for a lot of these publishers because they know that if, you know, Blizzard knows they remastered Diablo 2, there's going to be a ton of people that are going to just play that. Because it's not a ton of work. You know, the game design's already been done. You just need to update, especially for a remaster. You're doing the HD graphics and updating the sounds and the texture packs and everything else. They did it already this year with Warcraft 3, which apparently was a disaster for a remaster. So what do you guys think about this trend of just, instead of developing new properties, new franchises, new games, just remastering or remaking old ones?
Yeah, I'm going to jump in real quick. I think on a case-by-case basis, it kind of works. And in one way, like, remastering a game, I feel has far more merit than remaking a film, as Hollywood has done. It's because in general, they're just trying to take the same game and improve the visual fidelity for the modern era, or give quality of life improvements. They don't, most of the time with these remasters, are not drastically changing the story. I don't know how many remasters I've played, but you know, most of the time they're just completely Halo, the ones I can think of, like the Halo 1 anniversary and Halo 2 anniversary, they just literally redid the graphics to make it look really amazing, and it was just really cool to see it looking more probably how the cutscenes of those games looked. Like Halo 2 had some beautiful cutscenes, right? But the actual game itself didn't look as pretty as the cutscenes. Well, now the actual game and the cutscenes look the same, and it's kind of neat to seamlessly move that way. But they don't always come out that good. Like you were saying with that Warcraft 3 remaster, I've seen some remasters where, for whatever reason, whoever's in charge of the remaster just kind of a sloppy job, because it's a cash cow, so they probably don't spend a lot of money. They're like, hey, you guys, remaster this real quick, and it's kind of a crapshoot. So like I said, it's kind of a case-by-case basis. I would hope with something like Diablo 2 that they're going to put forth a great effort, because I love that game, but I think that game tops out at 800 by 600, you know, SVGA. I mean, that was still made in the era of a 2D, it was a full 2D engine, right? A very old VESA build. And, you know, maybe they can bring it up to speed with a more hybrid engine like Diablo 3 had. That would be cool. For me, I think it just depends on the game. Some games, when they're remastered, are great. Some games, the classic still stands.
Yeah, the remasters typically seem to be a audio and visual update to the old games.
The ones I don't like is where they do like a cheap, like recently they did that Kingdoms of Amalur Re-Reckoning, and they didn't do much with it at all except, you know, bump it up to 4K, but it's like the same textures. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they've barely updated it at all. Sure, they're not charging full price for it, but like, to me, that was kind of, and I think the whole reason that happened was because the license was lost, and so it was almost like they had to do that to make it a new game, but they didn't really put forth much of an effort. It was more of like an upscan.
Apparently that was the big issue with the Warcraft Reforged, I think was the name. They had announced at one of the BlizzCons they were redoing cinematics and texture packs and everything else, and then when it came out, none of that they had shown at BlizzCon was in there. And on top of that, matchmaking was broken. They redid the entire EULA, apparently, because I don't know if I wasn't aware of this, but at the time, Dota spawned from Warcraft 3, and all the custom stuff that was developed within the Warcraft 3 engine. So they changed EULA in this version of the game and redid all the clients, even the old clients, so that to prevent another Dota situation. And then on top of all that, the matchmaking was broken. Things were a mess. And this is for a game that was a remaster. So that hardcore fan base was especially pissed off. With remakes, and I'll get to in a bit with my playthrough of Final Fantasy VII, the art director, the game director, took a lot of liberties.
Yeah, they changed a lot with that one. You're right.
And it was almost like, instead of just redoing the entire game, they took a big a small portion of it and turned it into a 35-hour game. And remade the story still pretty faithful to the original story, but filled in all those little details. So I didn't feel like, even though it was only the first disc of Final Fantasy VII, for example, where you're trying to get out of the city, you get a complete game and they fill in all the gaps, all the character gaps, and you feel really emotionally attached to the characters in the game. Like, it's a fully fleshed out game within the confines of, you know, the larger narrative.
I think that remasters and remakes maybe provide a little bit more of a, maybe remasters in the sense, like, on the industry side, a way for younger designers and developers and game creators to cut their teeth in the industry and to not necessarily put themselves at like a risk of like resume stuff, like, oh, you know, one of the first things I did was I worked on, you know, the Kingdoms of Amalur remaster, or, you know, the Red Faction Guerrilla remaster or whatever. And, you know, they're not going to be games that are going to be like receiving critical praise for their remaster work, but like they're not going to hurt their resume, like maybe like Warcraft 3 Reforged would or whatever, but it gives them a chance to cut their teeth and get in the industry and maybe get themselves to a point where they can work for a AAA studio like Sony Santa Monica or 343 or Coalition or whatever. So I think
I would say the remasters are safer than a remake, because a remake, you take liberties with the story, well, that's dangerous.
Let's look at what remakes have come out, really. It's Final Fantasy VII Remake and the Resident Evil. Those are really the only two big remakes that have really hit outside of straight-up IP reboots, right?
Yeah, so I guess.
I feel like remakes is a very new thing, and as time goes on, we'll see what it is. So far, Final Fantasy VII and Resident Evil 2 have hit really well. You know, they've landed and been very well received. So, I mean, I guess...
Like you were saying, one of the nice things, too, about a remaster, sometimes a game, when it's developed, the concept of the game far outreaches the current generation of hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Borderlands series worked on the 360, but it ran at 30 frames not all the time. It got kind of choppy. There was, you know, split screen was really choppy. But when they did, like, the Handsome Jack remaster collection, you finally got to experience those games. Ran at 60 frames, 1080p, then they even gave it a 4K 60 frame update, and it just made the game more enjoyable. Kind of like when they remaster a film from it was released on DVD, and then they remaster it for Blu-ray, and they clean up, you know, they do a rescan of the film, and it's nice and clean. That's kind of how the game remasters, I feel, are like, where they've cleaned up that picture for you, and your gameplay is better for that. The remakes, yeah, whole new gaming hasn't really explored that much.
And we're in the beginning of a generation, so remasters may be more commonplace right now, but I think as...
Yeah, it's like Ubo brought up at the beginning, it's an easy way to make some cash. Yeah.
But as we progress through this generation, maybe, Ubo, we'll see more remakes. What's a franchise you want to see a remake on, Ubo? Like a straight up, like a legit remake, like Final Fantasy VII or Resident Evil 2.
Sorry, that question caught me off guard. I hadn't even thought about that. The first game that comes to mind is Star Wars Rebellion, because, you know, we mentioned it earlier. KOTOR's already in the works, but Rebellion was like a PC RTS game, and it was nowhere near close to Warcraft or Starcraft. Like, there was no map base building. It was planetary conquest type of thing, and I'd love to see a new version of that. Yeah, I'm just looking at online to see what other remakes have happened, and one that escaped my mind here was Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. That game for Game Boy, I played the crap out of that game.
Was that a wasn't that a sequel?
Link's Awakening was a game, like OG Game Boy game.
It's like a side story to Link to the Past.
Well, it's a Zelda game. They all kind of fit in some weird, cracked out chronology that no one could follow. Which apparently, Breath of the Wild is 0.0 in that timeline, supposedly. I don't know how that works. But I mean, to port that original Game Boy game into a Switch game, that was, you know, that you can see being a ton of work. The game systems itself apparently were very similar to the original game, just updated to take advantage of the fact that you had multiple buttons instead of just A, B, right?
Yeah.
And completely new graphics, yada, yada, yada. But yeah, Rebelling stands out.
Okay, cool. Well, I mean, that was a pretty deep question. I mean, I appreciate it. It definitely, I think we're in a new era of video games that may have to pull a lot of old video games up to the future that would require that remake moniker to attach to it. So thanks, Ulu, for that question. It was definitely thought-provoking. But what are you playing, Ubo, currently, besides Final Fantasy VII Remake?
Well, before I get into that, you know, I am a Destiny junkie, so I've been playing the crap out of this current season, doing all the new content that came out back in November, with the Beyond Light expansion. The raid is a ton of fun, if you ever get a chance to go in there. It's probably the best raid since, I want to say, Wrath of the Machine. I've been playing both on PC and Xbox, with a bunch of the tag guys, Scotty, Scribe, Obi, Ghost. We've had a ton of fun there, but the season's kind of winding down, so I'm kind of, you know, filling in the void by catching up on my backlog, which is impossible to ever catch up on, especially since I am a Destiny junkie in reality. I started playing Final Fantasy VII Remake, and as I mentioned, it's focused on that first CD of the game, if you ever played, which was just Escape in Midgard. And what they really did was turn the first, I can't remember if it was 5 to 10 hours of the game, into a 35, 40 hour game. Like, they really fleshed out all the characters from, and they fleshed out all the background characters that were just kind of like in passing. So that entire Avalanche crew of Jesse, Biggs, and Wedge, who were just kind of background characters that kind of died in that original story, and who cares, you just moved
on.
It's a 23-year-old spoiler, sorry. And no one cared about them dying. They really fleshed out those characters and really developed each of them to give them huge personalities in the game. Like, you learn that Jesse, her parents lived on topside, and there's a whole mission where you go up there and you steal her dad's security pass, because her dad used to work at one of the Shindra reactors, and that's how you get into a Shindra reactor. Like, they really go into depth and all the characters and really flesh it out. What I found interesting in this remake was they really kept a lot of the main story beats of that original game, and it even kept a lot of the small beats. Like, there was little things like when you're escorting Aerith from the church out of the slums, like little things like you're walking through the rooftops. There were parts in the original game where, you know, Aerith was teasing Cloud about, oh, maybe they want me to be one of their soldiers. And she's trying to hop across, and she's like, Cloud, wait. And she's kind of stuck, and she's got to take a couple of seconds to kind of make a jump. They kept all those little moments in the remake. So it was amazing to see a game that I played, I've probably beaten in the teens of times, so both on PC and PlayStation 1 and everything else, playing it again and kind of it living up to that standard of how I remember it. It was kind of amazing. The combat kind of drove me a little crazy at first because it's a mix of, you got to charge up your turn meter, if you want to call it that, in order to do things like cast a spell or use a potion, but at the same time you were actively engaged in attacking and blocking at the same time. I found that system a little frustrating since I wasn't used to active combat, like apparently Final Fantasy 15 is much more active combat. But by the end, I ended up getting sucked into playing it on hard mode and just 100%ing platinuming that game, which I think I clocked in around 90 hours of playing through that game multiple times to get all those trophies. And it really lived up to that legacy, Final Fantasy VII. I think the most interesting part, and I don't know if I'm allowed to talk spoilers or not, was in the remake, it kind of hints into possibly changing the story, because they added, they added new encounters into it. They also added this idea that the planet was manipulating the events of the storyline through ghosts and whispers of fate. So one of the final bosses, and if someone hasn't played this, here's a spoiler alert, so you may want to skip ahead 20-30 seconds. You're actually fighting Destiny itself, like a boss called Destiny, which is showing you multiple futures and hints of the rest of the game.
That's kind of cool.
And I don't know if you want me to spoil this for you or not, Fen or Homp.
I mean, I will probably end up playing it, but go ahead.
So some of the characters in the story, like Barrett dies in this story, but because he doesn't die in the original, the ghosts revive him. And there's moments in the story where Wedge supposedly died when the plate drops, but he's still alive later on, but then the ghosts kill him off because he's not supposed to be alive. There's weird things like that, and then we're really hints at the end of the game that maybe, like in the original game, Aerith dies at Sephiroth's hand. Hinting of deviating from that was end of the game, when it's all over, one of the characters who supposedly died when the plate fell on that sector, Biggs, he was alive at the end. And it may be a function of the fact that you killed Destiny, or you defeated the incarnation of Destiny in that storyline. So they're hinting it might be different timelines. So it's interesting to see where they go with that remake. I fully felt like I got a full game out of that. I mean, I got 90 hours playing that game, so it was kind of bonkers. Once I finished that, okay, and spoilers over, sorry if I ruined anything for your Hop. I started playing Ghost of Tsushima, which I believe was a game that Stevie had as his...
Yeah, Stevie was pretty hyped about that game.
Yeah, so I started playing it, and I was told on another podcast to try it out using Kurosawa mode. And I have no idea who this Akira Kurosawa was. I'd never even heard of the name, and Hop's going to kill me now.
Yes, you are now dead to me.
And let's hold on, hold on. History lesson from Optimus.
Hold on. So I was telling... So you can play this game, Ghost of Tsushima, in Kurosawa mode, which makes it a black and white game with a 50s filter over it, so it's got that grainy texture to it. And it's all in Japanese with English subtitles. And apparently those Kurosawa movies were an inspiration for this game. So it is a samurai...
Damn right they were.
So it's a samurai-based game. A lot of people kind of say it's akin to like Assassin's Creed because there's a lot of sneaking around. And the main plot line, I'm not completely done it. The main plot line is Mongols have invaded the island of Japan, and you and your uncle are trying to repel the invasion, and just all the samurais get brutally murdered by an enemy that does not play by the same rules. So your uncle kind of beats into you, or very strongly instills in you, this samurai code of, you know, you do everything with honor. If you're going to kill a person, you look them straight in the eye so you can see them before you deliver death upon them. And then he's captured in this big battle at the beginning, so then you spend the entire first act, you know, going around the island, kind of confronting a very brutal enemy with very brutal tactics. Again, becoming almost like an Assassin's Creed style sneaking around game. And it gives you options of how you want to play the game. You could walk up to an entire fort and try to, you know, challenge them all into a samurai duel standoff, in which you can then try to battle everyone. But then there's some missions in the game where you have to very stealthily sneak through an encampment in order to free hostages. So the game forces you into this narrative of you're betraying your samurai code in order to rescue your uncle and rescue the island. So it's playing into that narrative. I told Scribe during a Destiny raid that I was playing this, and I didn't know who Akira Kozawa was, and he yelled at me at the top of his lungs, and I had never...
Scribe is now my best friend.
Scribe is a pretty chill dude, so I went out of my way to make sure that I watched Seven Samurai, and yeah, that movie being a 3.5-hour movie...
You didn't watch Yojimbo?
No, I have Rodan on my list, as well as
Rashomon,
on my list. But Seven Samurai being a 3.5-hour 50s film does not feel like it's a 3.5-hour film.
No, you need to watch Yojimbo, Sanjiro.
Yeah, so
The Hidden Fortress.
You're gonna have to send me all these these names, so, because I watched that movie today and it did not feel like a 3.5-hour movie.
No, that's a great movie.
It is fantastic for
That's
a 50s
awesome.
Film. And apparently that was a huge inspiration. It's funny because watching that movie, you can see all the little tropes that Ghost of Tsushima picked up on, as well as some of the character names. They even picked up some of the character names out of that movie.
Yeah.
So I'm loving Ghost of Tsushima. It's such a fantastic game. I love the art style. It playing it in black and white, which is apparently a more difficult way of playing it because apparently attacks are color coded. I couldn't tell you what attack is coming at me based off of the color because it just looks like a grayish ping. And I think that's the only criticism I have right now is when one of the missions is look for the blue flowers to guide you to Goku-san's resting place. And then I'm looking around the landscape going, I don't see no fucking blue flowers. What are you talking about?
Well,
everything's
black and white. Yeah.
And,
that's awesome, man.
It takes me a while to find out where it is, but that game is just absolutely fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I don't have a PlayStation, so maybe someday. Let's see. I've been still playing Black Ops Cold War. It's a lot of fun. Knee-deep. Well, waist deep in Assassin's Creed Origins. This has been a nice new to me series. Kind of. Last time I played Assassin's Creed was 2, and I just got Origins, and I'm loving it. And I'm still loving MK11 on the Series X. It looks amazing. I've also been having fun with Injustice 2. We've been playing that on Fight Club, and then Forza Horizon 4 with that Series X enhanced patch is also really sweet. What have you been playing, Finn?
You know, just the usual Black Ops Cold War with you, dipping into some PUBG with Hybrid, Noble Matt, and a few others, especially Primordial Goo. It's been nice to chat with him again. And then I've waned on the Cyberpunk 2077. I'm just waiting for that patch.
I need a shot. I do a shot every time I hear that CP27.
That is true. So. I'm not feeling it anymore for some reason. I haven't really run into any game-breaking things. Like, I haven't had any issues with it, but I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's not game of the year for me, like some people seem to be claiming. So I'll get back to it when I get back to it. But I have been enjoying my time with some Torchlight 3, Diablo-like game, running around as a wizard, throwing magic at people, goblins and giant rats and spiders. It's been fun, so... I look forward to finishing that up. And the big thing is, we try to keep things real here at TAG. We have a community night. Hop, you got any information?
Well, Thursday nights it's our community game night, and every week we get together and play some awesome games. We got some fun games lined up for this next month. Check out our Discord and jump into the Xbox Game Night channel to check out what we're playing. I'll tell you, this Thursday we're jamming to some Titanfall 2, so get on it if you love Titanfall 2. And then Friday nights, I created a thing called Fight Club where we play fighting games. It's usually, lately it's just been me, Warlock, Sith, Silver Tongue, occasionally Jingle Jangs, sometimes Dead shows up, and Willow. It's a good time. We've been playing a lot of MK11 and Injustice 2, which is on Game Pass, which is pretty fun. So if you have Game Pass and you want to throw down some Dukes, hit us up Friday nights. Usually starts around 9:30 Eastern time.
It was a fun watch. I was watching Sith stream it the other night, and it was kind of funny to watch all those wild fatalities they put into Mortal Kombat.
Oh yeah, they're insane.
Yeah, and if you're unsure, yeah, follow our good old Canadian Sithy on Twitch, and you might see what happens on a Thursday night and a Friday night, because he almost always streams those.
I can't believe that he would just slice you in half, Hop, and then rip out your intestines, and then there's Baraka wearing it like sausages over his shoulders. Oh, you saw
that
one?
Yeah, that was pretty gruesome.
I was dying. See him showed up with like sausage meat on his like costume. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Good old did he become Mortal a butcher? Good old Mortal Kombat. I mean, just wait until you play as what's her name? Kitty Cage, the daughter of Johnny Cage, and you like do the fatality on her father, which is like her nut punching him over and over again.
It's yeah.
Quite hilarious. Last episode, we did our game of the year for 2020, and we usually like to do that in the first episode of January. In the second episode of January, we like to kind of focus on the future and see what's coming out and, call it our hype tape, if you will. What are you most excited for when it comes to 2021 and video games? And we've kind of put together a collection list of games, and we can kind of just, touch on them a little bit and, rub it around a bit, see what happens, and get you hyped up for some games that we're excited for. So, Ubo, what's something that's tickling your fancy?
As I mentioned, I'm a total Destiny mark. I've been playing since launch, and recently they announced and they normally never do this. They announced like a 3-year plan. Pretty much, I think, leading to what is ultimately going to be the end of Destiny with, I think, their 2023 expansion, which they're calling Lightfall. But the 2021 expansion has been named, for now, the Witch Queen. And for years, it's been rumored that Crota, not just Crota, Oryx has a sister, Savathun. And Savathun was the one that supposedly has put the big curse on the Dreaming City that's been there since, I want to say, year 2 of Destiny with Forsaken. And she's always been around in the background, and this is the first time that we're going to have an expansion centered around this figure that pretty much has been pulling the strings in the Destiny universe for 6-7 years now. It'll be 8 years when it finally comes out, and it's just finally to see where that story goes. Like, a lot, we give a ton of crap for how slow the Destiny lore story kind of comes out, but when they do with these expansions, it comes out normally in a flood. And I think the Witch Queen is that one big piece that they've been building for since Forsaken. So for almost like 2-3 years now, they've been building up to this big reveal of Oryx's sister, and we're hoping that it kind of captures that same vibe that they had in The Taken King and Forsaken with this fall expansion. So I'm pretty excited for that. I'm going to get it anyway, since I'm, you know, neck deep in that franchise.
All right. Hop, what's something you're looking forward to?
Well, probably maybe not number one, but when I saw the footage and the trailer and people playing the alpha build, freaked the hell out when they announced Back 4 Blood. I'm really excited. I love the Left 4 Dead games, and the Back 4 Blood preview and the alpha gameplay just look amazing. I can't wait to have some co-op zombie killing fun again with some friends. Also, they really did a good job on like the firearms models and reload animations, and it just looks amazing. Super excited for that game. What about you, Finn?
You know, it's high up on my list, but I'm gonna have to say 12 Minutes. I don't know if you know anything about this, but it's from Annapurna Games, and it's like Groundhog Day inside of a small, tiny apartment.
Interesting.
And well, I think I've heard of it. Don't they have a crazy cast for this?
Yeah, William Dafoe, Daisy Ridley, and I'm drawing a blank on the last name. Give me like 2 seconds, but
I'll Google it for you.
Yeah, they it's a couple inside this apartment, and this. And a murder happens, and the guy keeps reliving the 12-minute time frame that this murder happened in. And so he has to, I guess, figure out how to stop this time loop or solve the mystery or something. So it looks pretty cool. It's like a top-down viewpoint into this apartment. So, I don't know. Check out the trailer if you haven't yet. 12 Minutes. It looks wild. It was announced last E3. On the Microsoft stage, the actual E3 that happened. So it's been a couple years since it's been announced, so I'm excited to see what happens. But yeah, William Dafoe, Daisy Ridley, and I was hoping
James McAvoy.
So James McAvoy. Yep,
you have Professor X, Rey Skywalker, and Norman Osborn in the same room.
Yeah. I would have gone with the detective from Boondock Saints, but that's fine too. Yeah. But anyways, yeah, that's one of the games I'm looking forward to. Ubo, another thing you're looking forward to.
High on my list of things I'm looking forward to, because I'm going to get it anyways, is the remake. Speaking about remasters, remakes. I should say remaster of Super Mario 3D World from the Wii U, which not a ton of people played, but I played the crap out of that game with my kids. Plus Bowser's Fury, which I don't know if you saw the trailer for it. They're adding all new levels to the original game, and it looked like you end up playing as, or you end up playing against a giant lava Bowser in these levels. Tripped out.
Yeah, my son's looking forward to that one too.
And then in the trailer, it kind of hints that you turn into a Super Saiyan cat.
What?
To fight that Bowser. So it's like, holy smokes, I'm on. Like, I'm a sucker for those Nintendo games, especially the Mario games. These games that you can play with your kids, I'm all for, because it was a ton of fun the first time around. I'm looking forward to playing through it again with them.
Nice.
Hop, what else?
I am really looking forward to Axiom Verge 2. The first one, yeah, it's been out 4, 5, maybe 6 years now. It's a Metroidvania style game. It was first released, I think, on PlayStation and PC, and then Switch and find the Xbox, created by one guy. He made the game in his spare time. He's a programmer, the first one, and all the proceeds went to helping his son, who has a like life debilitating disease, a very, very kind of scary nervous system disease. Really looking forward to the second one because the first game was amazing. It was probably my favorite Metroidvania outside of Metroid, Super Metroid, and Castlevania Symphony of the Night. It's that good. If you haven't played the first Axiom Verge, it's on every platform. Go get it now. It's awesome.
Says the guy who still hasn't played Ori.
Hey.
It's not everyone's cup of tea. Don't you be defecating on Hop's Pizza.
Look at that callback, Hop. I'm telling you, Ori, it's just a beautiful, beautiful game. In the visuals and in the storytelling. I mean...
Hey. But what are you looking forward to? That's enough about Ori.
Another on my list is Biomutant. That game is...
Yeah, I saw that popping up today. It has a date or something, yep, right?
May 25th. And
Star Wars Day.
It's a THQ Nordic game, and it looks pretty awesome. The picture keeps looking like a raccoon-looking thing, but as you find mutations and things, you can create almost like a wild amalgamation of random powers and things. So it seems like it's got a lot of different possibilities to that game. So I'm really excited to it. It's an action RPG type thing, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that. I don't know if I'll get it right away, depending on kind of how big the world is when we kind of get those details, but I definitely look forward to picking that up. Ubo.
So, since, you know, I like to think of myself as the self-proclaimed PlayStation guy, I will fight Audible for that title. I have a couple of PlayStation exclusive games here. I think I'll start with the one that I believe has been announced for 2021, and that's Horizon Forbidden West, which is the sequel to Horizon Zero Dawn, which, in my opinion, is probably the best science fiction game that I've played on any platform, anywhere that's above Halo, that's above anyone else in terms of a story. And I'm looking forward to what they do with Forbidden West, because the trailers hint at you being able to control giant robotic woolly mammoths, and that story kind of expands that universe. Because in the first story, it kind of mentions that there is the Forbidden West area, and you're not allowed to go there. It was they mentioned to that area in passing. You could never go there in the game, but it'll be exciting to see where they go with that series.
All right, Hop. Anything else you're looking forward to?
I'm just going to throw a couple quick ones and then a big one, right? So King of Fighters 15 was announced. Hopefully it's on Xbox. Samurai Showdown was, so hopefully it's not a PlayStation exclusive like Guilty Gear is. That makes me sad about Guilty Gear. Crossfire X is a multiplayer game similar to Call of Duty that's been released in China. It's going to come out on Xbox with a campaign by Remedy, so that looks awesome. But the big one, the creme de la creme, the game I think a lot of us have been waiting for, if you're on Xbox, Halo Infinite. That's probably the game I've been waiting for since Halo 5, so it's like 5 years now.
Yeah, I mean, Halo Infinite is definitely on the top of my list as well, but I will have to say there are some other games I'm really excited for. Mass Effect Legendary Edition, going back to that remake.
I'm going
to
get that
remastered conversation. I love that series. It's my favorite franchise to play, so I'm looking forward to diving back in and reliving that experience and reuniting with my girl Tally, because she has my heart. She has my heart forever. And then Outriders from People Can Fly Studios. That game looks like it's going to be really cool. It's kind of like a Borderlands looter shooter thing. Yeah. So
that looks cool. I'm very interested in playing that too.
It's kind of like Borderlands meets Mass Effect. So I'm kind of excited about that. So we'll see what happens.
With a little Gears of War thrown in too.
Yes. And then my big game that I'm looking forward to, and I hope it comes out, but based on the way this author doesn't like to finish series, George R.R. Martin has collaborated with From Software to create Elden Ring.
Oh, jeez.
And you guys know me. I've said this many times. Dark Souls is one of my favorite franchises as well, and I'm excited to see what From Software does with this Elden Ring game. There's really no details to share at this time, but supposedly it's supposed to come out this year, so I look forward to seeing what happens with that. Ubo, what is your, as Hop says, a creme de la creme game for this year?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of games that I'm not sure if they're coming out this year, that I have kind of on the back of my mind. Diablo 4, who knows when that's going to come out. People are thinking 2021. I'm like, you're crazy. That's not happening. Fable is another one I kind of look forward to, but I don't think... All they teased was just a title. Nothing else. Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 2. I'm looking forward to it after 90 hours in the first one, but I don't know when they're coming, when that's coming out. And considering the first episode took 7 years to release, I'm not holding my breath. Breath of the Wild 2, I don't know when that's happening, but Nintendo has this weird thing of they don't announce a game until it's 3 months out from being released. So if they announce Breath of the Wild 2, you know it's going to come quickly. And you can start looking at Paper Mario, Luigi's Mansion. No one had any idea those games were coming out until like 3 months before they were released. Like, Nintendo holds those cards close to their vest. The big game that I'm very hopeful that will come out this year is God of War Ragnarok, which is a sequel to God of War 2018, which is just a reimagining. I guess I wouldn't call it a reimagining. I would say it's a sequel to the previous Greek God of War story, where you now have Kratos in a Norse mythology setting. And the ending of the game, another spoiler, ends with Thor showing up at Kratos' door. And that's where the game ends. So...
But is he fat and full of beer?
Well, they hinted to it. Like, they were... In the game, they have all these funny stories as you're traveling about how brutal the Norse gods are. And they suggest, yeah, some of the gods overdrank and they just...
That's hilarious.
Kill mortals and everything. No, this Thor that showed up, he looked crazy, brutal, insane. And the game just ends there. Which, of course, teases a sequel. So, to see the fact that they named that Ragnarok... It will be amazing to see how that story evolves from there and how Kratos kind of plays into that storyline. And I'm really hyped for it. I don't know if it's going to come out in 2021. I'm super hopeful. But, you know, 2020, 2020, 2021, everything's being delayed because it's, you know...
Mm-hmm.
It's things aren't easy these days, right? So
yeah, good. Don't say it, because if you say it, then we all have to take another shot. Man.
Yep.
I won't.
Well, I think like we hit the nail on the head. There's a lot to be excited for 2021, and when it comes to our favorite hobby of video games, and there's a lot to look forward to. I can't wait to see what unknown things get announced that may come out this year. And I also look forward to just kind of hearing more about things that may come out for in the future as well, because it's always nice to look forward to something. So I for those of you that have listened to this point this far in the show, please come to our Discord. Come chat with us about what you're excited for when it comes to video games over the course of this year or just in general. Come let us know what your thoughts are on remakes versus remasters. Let us know if there's a game or franchise you'd love to see a remake on. We would love to hear your thoughts. You can find us at theadultgamer.com and join our Discord through the links there. Ubo, do you have any final thoughts or any shout outs you want to give before we hit the red light or turn the red light off?
No, you can just hit me up. I'm little Ubo on pretty much every platform: Steam, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, wherever. pretty much on Destiny all the time, although I'm on a big RPG kicker right now. And the last thing I wanted to say is February 21st is going to be the 35th anniversary of Legend of Zelda. Don't be surprised if they announce something that day for this year. It's the 35th anniversary of Zelda. Breath of the Wild.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Man, Zelda got a higher mark than Tamzilla this time. Hop. I don't know.
Why are you going to put me in the doghouse? why are you
going to
do that?
Hop, you got anything, any shout-outs or anything you want to put out there?
Just hit us up at theadultgamer.com. You can find me there. Hit me up if you want to play some Black Ops, some Borderlands, some Mortal Kombat. I'm down for all that. Come join our community. It's a great place to hang out and play games with other people that just want to chill and play games.
Yeah. We are The Adult Gamer, and I'm Fenrir765, so thanks for joining us for another episode. We look forward to seeing you here shortly. Have a good night, everybody, or day, or morning, or whatever it is for you as you're listening. But we will catch you on the flippity flip.
Peace.